Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 9 of
Merry Christmas!
Merry Christmas, everybody!
Oh, couldn't even wait that long.
Oh, I couldn't. I'm excited, you guys. He's coming.
I'm here. He's coming.
Maybe he's here.
I'm too excited. I'm drinking my peppermint coffee. Oh,
very
great
jolly
time of year. Yeah, I'm jolly.
Really, he's ready to go today. He is. He's got the holiday spirit today.
Mm-hmm. Both Holly and Jolly. Yeah.
All right, well, Before we get into it, thank you everyone for being here. This is our Christmas special episode on our bad movies. Before we get started, just as a friendly reminder to follow us on social media at Friday Flicks Podcast and send us an email. Let us know how we're doing. Let us know what movies you want us to review at jkentertainment247@gmail.com. All right, we got a bigger group again here today. First up, we've got Jimmy Anthony, and he's going to be Droppo.
I wasn't sleeping, Chief. I just heard that I haven't been able to sleep these last few months. I forgot how, so I was just practicing. And oopsie.
That was almost like Tigger right there.
Yeah. Yeah, can I be Tigger and say?
Yeah,
I don't know. Right. I had it earlier. I lost it.
Byron Anthony is back with us. He's going to be Chochum, the old wise Martian.
Oh, these little Martian boys and girls need Santa. Kidnap Santa.
That dude is so weird. And like,
yeah.
He just totally looks like an Earth wizard. He doesn't look like anything.
Yeah,
like
he doesn't like have the antennas.
I know, it's stupid.
He's so wise. Doesn't need them.
Is there like a like subplot that they're hinting at where like he came from Earth and he's like, you know? I don't know, Jimmy.
Is this movie even worse?
There's like
that kind of deep
there's like some
analysis.
some. There's the world building is not complete though, and we need to fix that.
Right.
Yeah, right, Chochum is the ancient space god Chochum.
Well, this is, you guys, I don't know if you know, we can get into it later. This is part of the SCU, the Santa Cinematic Universe.
Oh, okay.
Which includes a lot of...
Oh my god.
No? Okay, moving right along.
Also
with us today, Cynthia Anthony is back, and she's going to be Little Betty.
What are those funny things sticking out of your head? Are you a television set?
I think the response to that was like, what a stupid question.
Yeah, that is what he says.
The listeners have not seen a picture of these Martians that Santa Claus conquers. At least as you're listening to this, pull that up on your phone or computer, because then my line makes sense that they're funny things sticking out of their head and they look like a television set. It's worth, if nothing else, just look at a picture from this movie.
And like a hose or tube of some kind.
Yeah, it's not an unreasonable question, really.
Yeah.
Daniel McCarley is also here. He's going to be the one and only Santa Claus.
Ho, ho, ho. No, we're going out the good old-fashioned way. Prancer and Dancer and Donder and Blitzen and Vixen Nixon. It's mixed up the things. The kids know their names.
Nice. That was a good line.
Yeah. Forgot about the Nixon name drop. Well, that'd be interesting to talk about at some point. How did this line up with the Nixon presidency and... What does that mean?
This movie came out halfway between his vice presidency and his presidency stints. So, but I'm sure Nixon was still a public figure.
Yeah, it must be interesting.
All right, and I'm your host, Kelly Anthony, and I'm gonna be Voldar. All this trouble over a fat little man in a red suit? Is this what you want? To turn the children of Mars into nincompoops like these?
Yeah, I especially appreciated the use of the word nincompoop.
Yeah.
I haven't heard that one since, I don't know when. Blast from the past.
Yeah, nincompoop.
Yeah, I know. That's why I had to say it. You don't hear the word nincompoop in every film these days, you know?
I every time I hear that line, because we watched it twice and then I just heard you say it, when he says nincompooped like these, like, I'm pretty sure that's grammatically correct, but it just has a weird, the use of these right there, like them, just sounds so much more natural, you know? Nincompoops like them, but it's like...
Maybe he says them, but I think...
No, he says these. No, he does say these, because it stood out to me. It's like, is that the... Does that make sense? And I like stopped and thought about it for a weird little second there, just like I did right now.
All right. Well, today we are talking about the 1964 film Santa Claus Conquers the Martians. A great bad movie to talk about this holiday season. Let me do a quick synopsis of this film before I turn it over to Daniel to give us some more fun facts and trivia. This story follows Martians concerned about their children's lack of joy and imagination. Meanwhile, on Earth, Santa is busy preparing for Christmas in his workshop at the North Pole. The Martians manage to abduct Santa along with two Earth children, Billy and Betty. Once on Mars, Santa is tasked with bringing happiness to the Martian children by making toys for them. And silliness ensues. So, Daniel, I know this is kind of a weird movie that doesn't have a ton of trivia and information, but what did you happen to find about this movie?
You know what? I'll say this. Of the movies we're doing... this season, this is the only one that I had never heard of. I was totally unfamiliar with this movie. I never heard of it. It came out in 64 in time for the holiday season of 1964, and that's too old for there to be box office data or Oscar data available. And it was in theaters. It plays kind of like a TV movie.
That's what I thought.
But that is like the vibe of it. That's not even like a criticism. I'm getting into it. It feels more like something that would have been on TV.
Yeah.
But it's the same year as the Rankin and Bass Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. Interestingly, to give context, if you're into like Cold War flying saucers and military stuff, Doctor Strangelove came out the same year.
Oh, wow.
And this could be, you do a double bill with that to add to the, you know, military paranoia.
Is that the movie, gosh, with all the pointless like B-roll of like, you know, military footage, there's one of like a plane getting refueled midair. And I'm like, God, there's another movie that features a long sequence with this. That is Dr. Strangelove, right?
Yes. That's why I thought of it. When it got to that scene where the plane is being refueled, I'm like, oh yeah, that's like from Dr. Strangelove. That's like, and that's the same year. Let's see what else came out. A Hard Day's Night came out. This was like the Beatles break year. Goldfinger, James Bond movie, Mary Poppins. The British Invasion was happening. Maybe that's what this is actually concerned about. Concerns about the British Invasion.
The
Martians are stand-ins for no. I just came up with that right now. I don't know. I'm definitely reach. Not. it's a real reach.
Well, yeah, you know what, Daniel, one question I was wondering, were holiday movies coming out every year around this time, you know, Rudolph, Charlie Brown, I mean, so that they were looked forward to, or, you know, there was a big appetite for them, either on television or, but this was a movie released, right? This was in theaters, am I right?
Right, this was in theaters. I mean, it was a pretty low budget movie. It played like matinees and B rolls and stuff, but it was in theaters.
And yeah, so maybe other Christmas movies I think were coming out like, frequently.
There were other Christmas movies. I think there was always Christmas stuff coming out, but this is like this stuff is really exploding this time. This is when you're getting like all the thing, more and more recording artists are putting out Christmas albums and that stuff. That is kind of booming at this time. I guess based on what I read, I guess it was something of a success, at least relative to its budget. And it wasn't that obscure.
I mean, it seems pretty low budget. Pretty low budget.
According to what I read on Wikipedia, is that the estimated budget for this was $200,000. And when the only thing they had under reception was that the New York Times had a quote saying that it had a box office bonanza or something. Like, I think it at least made its money back. And the person who came up with this movie idea felt like there weren't enough movies being made for children. And it even said, like, at this time, the only kids movies being made were by Disney, and that this guy wanted to make a kids movie. And I think that kids liked it, and like families actually liked it when it first came out. And every year after it came out, they would show it again, like every season, Christmas season, like as a matinee, apparently. So I think this movie technically, for sure, like with financially, was a success for, you know, and it was a semi-hit for like maybe 5 years or so in the 60s. And then people forgot about it.
I don't know why it surprises me, because in 1964, I was a pretty young child, you know. I wish there were more people from my generation on the podcast to ask, but I have no memory of it at all, or ever even talking about it or laughing about it or anything. I never heard about it, Kelly, until you put it on our podcast list. So maybe it was more geographically watched or something. I don't know.
Yeah, I was going to say that they filmed this movie at some studio in Long Island. And a lot of the actors in this were actually Broadway actors at the time.
Yeah, I can tell that.
And yeah, they're not bad, actually. Like, no. The story is garbage, and the writing is, and it's for kids, and it doesn't aim high in any ways, you know, sets or anything. But the actors are, like, you can tell they're well trained. So I'm not surprised. I mean,
right. You can tell that they have some training.
They all kind of seem like they were, like, above average Shakespearean actors that got handed like this, like, ridiculous script. They're like, okay, well, then we'll be doing this. Gordon, whatever the hell his name was, you know, like they're just like able to handle like weird names and weird words kind of well.
That's because funny. I think they're like
above average stage actors.
Yeah. So to Cynthia's point, I wonder if this was more successful in like the New England area, maybe of the country.
Because yeah, that's like, made. I like up know. On the East Coast. Yeah, I could see that. Anyway, it seems like it was some kind of a success. But then it's not clear when its reputation started to go downhill, and it ended up on lists of bad movies and on Mystery Science 3000, which is like, this was the holiday episode they would replay every year of that. Was
God, we didn't watch that. We got to watch that after this recording. A funny show.
Yeah, where that's streaming, but... the credited production company is like J-Lore Productions or Jalore Productions, who never produced another movie. This is the only movie that company has ever credited with producing. And
well, fun fact, you mentioned Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer came out. It came out only a few months after this movie. But apparently this film was the first documented appearance of Mrs. Claus in a motion picture, coming 3 weeks before the television special Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, which also featured Mrs. Claus.
Oh, that's so fun.
Right, I read that. Yeah.
Really? I had a lot of fun
reading that fact.
Interesting.
This movie technically credited, technically as the first Mrs. Claus. So there you go.
Was it the first sort of story, fable, or tale that included Mrs. Claus? You know, we take her for granted. She's always been there in my life on Christmas. But maybe she's completely an invention of these movies and I can't remember, like, 'Twas the Night Before Christmas, if she's mentioned, or, you know, in the old Christmas tales, the legend of St. Nick and all this. I don't know.
That's a great question. I'm not sure
either. Well, let's see. With the use of the latest technology, It looks like the earliest recorded use of Mrs. Claus was in 1849 in something that was published on the East Coast. But I guess she was like a more obscure character or whatever for a while. But yeah, like the mid-1800s.
When was the poem?
The character that
'Twas the Night Before Christmas written.
That was like 1820. It's like early
1920.
Earlier than that. 1820.
Oh, 1820. Yeah. Okay, because I was gonna say, I feel like that's the poem or story that like I've like kind of has most of the Santa Claus lore that everything's based on. And but I don't think she's mentioned in that poem. So yeah.
What's the first recorded appearance of Cho-Chum?
Okay, so Cho-Chum,
I believe.
Actually, fun fact: all of this I got off of Wikipedia. But apparently, the word Cho-Chum comes from the Yiddish term for something wise, maybe, but that it actually can also mean like idiot.
Okay. So that's
just like an ironic thing. It's because that's like it's like an ironic slur. This like when someone
okay,
does
here we go.
You're like, hey,
oh, Einstein. right, like Einstein, yeah,
it's like that. Totally.
I was gonna say, yeah, genius.
Let me say this right. Okay, Cho-Chum is Yiddish or Hebrew meaning sage, though pronounced differently in the film's version. But in Yiddish, it is sometimes used ironically for fool. There you go.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's get into the film a little bit. The movie starts with like a news broadcast of Santa's workshop. They're like interviewing Santa and his little helpers. And Jimmy was cracking up at the news reporter guy.
That guy is funny.
That scene is actually like not bad. I was like on board for the first scene.
I know. Yeah. I was kind of like, okay.
That scene for the scene was actually executed.
I mean, he's telling these terrible jokes, and just the way that he laughs at himself, like, blah, 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 blah. Like, I don't know. I can't do it because I don't know all the dialogue, but it was just tickling my funny bone. It's ridiculous. And right off the bat, you're like, oh, okay, this is this kind of low quality 60s movie. But actually, it's like the sets and stuff and even the costumes, they look better than they do later when we're in the Martian world and everything's just like plywood, like with the one coat of paint, you know, like so simple. Like at the beginning here, it kind of looks a little bit more fleshed out in terms of like the sets, at least, and all that. But yeah, I don't know. Something about that guy. I wish, just play an audio clip of him saying a few things in the podcast, okay, and the audience will get it.
And I'll play it right now.
Hi, kids. This is Andy Henderson at the North Pole. Ooh, it's cold up here. From this spot, there's only one direction you can go, and that's south. Living up here is pretty rough. I don't see how Santa stands it. Since we've been here, we've eaten nothing but frozen food. At least that's the way it is by the time we get it. And now, let's take a look-see into Santa's workshop.
Well, he happens to find, like, a Martian toy. He's like, what is this toy? And Santa's like, oh, so-and-so, whatever the elves' names are. Fluffy made that, and that's what he thinks a Martian looks like. But it so happens that it's exactly what the Martians look like.
Yeah, what's up with that? Like, is this all happening in the imagination of some kids or something? Is that like anyway, I don't know. Maybe it's just supposed to...
It's like shadowing, if you know.
Foreshadowing,
as,
yeah.
As a literature element or something. But that scene, I knew this movie was in for trouble because... The elves are building things and they don't really have any tools. They keep repeating the same motion. There's no real action. All the elves look miserable. They aren't smiling. It's just so bad. It's so cheaply done. Yeah.
That is true.
Just trying to show Santa's workshop. And
how the elves look miserable is really funny. Yeah.
I thought it was
Santa's like robe or whatever was like really short. Like his like arms were out. in the first scene. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I did notice that. He was hot. I was like,
he was hot, is that what you said?
He was hot.
He's rolling up his sleeves.
Yeah,
there's work to be done, Byron.
Yeah.
The cameras are rolling.
He's a craftsman. No, I didn't notice that.
I thought that like there was like this one part where like they were like, oh, like only ghosts can do that. And then Santa like laughs. I was like, oh, what if Santa's like a ghost? That'd be cool.
You were trying hard to like it, I think. I didn't catch that. I do want to say, and I don't know if we're going to come later in this podcast to the acting, but I loved the Santa. I thought he was such a great Santa.
Yeah.
Really, really. He was warm. He had such a great Santa face. He looked like, you know, the Santa Claus artwork used in the old-fashioned Coca-Cola commercials. And
yeah,
he literally has beautiful cheekbones and cheeks and dimples. I mean, he is such a good looking, I don't mean handsome, but looks like everything you would dream a Santa's face would look like. So
yeah,
kudos to the Santa. And so, I don't know if that actor was known, because his name is featured in the credits and stuff, starring so-and-so as Santa. I don't know if he was well-known, or maybe he was, you know, some television actor, but I liked him.
Yeah, I thought he was good too. His name is John Call, and he made a fair amount of movies in the 50s. This was actually one of his last movies before he passed away. He died in 1973. So he did this, and then a TV series, NYPD. Oh, he was only in one episode. And then the Anderson tapes. So I don't know how famous.
Maybe he's just
was.
Known for being a Santa, just like one of those top-notch Santas. Maybe. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. High caliber. I agree. I thought he was good. I was going to say about this scene, though, I did think it was funny when Mrs. Claus comes out and she's like, why aren't we working? And then Santa's like, oh, the television's here. She's like, oh, we're on TV. Oh, we're on TV. I thought that was funny.
Don't even remember that.
I do, because I thought it was funny. Not what you would expect from Mrs. Claus. But so then we get our first glimpse of the children Martians who happen to be watching this on TV on Mars. Somehow they get Earth programs on Mars.
Mm-hmm. Well, TV signals do travel, but there's no way in hell they'd be watching it in perfect picture like that.
Dude, they have Martian technology. You don't know what they have.
They have antennas for brains, so maybe they are. Maybe they could.
Yeah. Yeah. But for some reason, they can't muster, you know, making their own programming. I don't know. Maybe they don't have the creativity and love and heart, I guess, to pull that
they
off.
Grow too like fast, too, they don't have like the inner too, child.
Right. Too mathematical and logical to come up with programs.
Yeah, see, this movie's really deep. It's really layered.
Here we go.
In some ways, I as I think more about it, Jimmy, I'm kind of going in your direction. I mean, first of all, you kind of wonder if it's sort of a condemnation, if you will, of television, because it's making the Martian children stupid. They just sit
right
there
at first.
It.
I did think that. Sorry, I didn't mean to. Yeah.
No, I agree. I'm thinking. So there are some levels for sure in this, and the Martian children are again, I hope our listeners go and see a picture of them, because they just sit there with the most deadpan face. They look so miserable, you know, and that's the whole premise of the story, right? They have no joy. And so the Martian guy goes down to kidnap Santa Claus, because they figure that Santa Claus brings joy to children, at least Earthling children. And thus the story is launched. But That was some good directing, to have those Martian kids just be so flat, so nothing. Okay with that choice.
Yeah, I mean it's something you can get kids to do.
Yeah.
Easily. And
I mean, we're supposed to be like, oh, what's wrong with the kids? And yeah, they do look like they have something wrong with them, the way they're staring at the screen like that. So yeah, it worked.
Well, the leader of the Martians, Kemar, is like, oh, they're still like this? Okay, I gotta round up his council to go to Chochum. And for some reason, Chochum, the wise Martian, knows all about Christmas. He's they're depressed. They're depressed because it's Christmas time. And they don't have Christmas.
Yeah, he came from Earth, like 300 years before, on like a pod, and he actually developed the Martian colony. And mm-hmm. he was the first one to invent those antenna hats. And so, you guys didn't hear about this?
This was a deleted scene.
Oh, I made that up. That's Jen none of that's
really,
true.
Really thought about this. I mean,
it's explained in the comics. You gotta read that. Yeah.
Okay. They actually did make a comic book about this movie and a novel about this movie.
Yeah, this thing has had a fair amount of like spin-offs. I don't know if we mentioned it earlier, but they do like live musical presentations of this movie.
No, I didn't get there yet.
Okay, we could save it for later, I guess. But anyway, it's got a following, a legacy.
Yeah, I actually think if the movie had started with like an astronaut getting lost in space and going to Mars and then like starting this colony and then turning into this. And then what if like at the end, Chochum gets to meet Santa? That would have been like the Chochum character could have made this movie so much more interesting. They had fleshed him out more.
Hopefully they'll do a spinoff. We should pitch a spinoff to Hollywood.
The Chochum. Well, apparently
Chochum Returns.
They were going to do a sequel or a remake of this in like the late 90s. And Jim Carrey was supposed to play the Dropo character. But then it died in development hell, apparently.
It would have been terrible.
Can't surprise.
Yeah, that's not a good time for
I mean, what do you mean?
You know, it's not a bad idea to put out there, but I don't know. This is not a good time for Jim Carrey.
What do you mean? The late 90s? That was like when he was a star. What are you talking about?
I mean, Jim Carrey could do it today. Well, he was. Well, it says like 2002. He was never mind. This is like when he was the Grinch, the Return.
Yeah, that's when he was a star. What are you talking about? That's what I'm saying. Anyways, so Chochum tells them you got to go get Santa, or I don't know if he actually tells them to go get Santa, but he's telling them like, oh yeah, they need the Christmas spirit to be happy. So then the Martians decide to go kidnap Santa Claus to bring him back to Mars to make the children happy. So they go to Earth and they're trying to find Santa, but they're confused because there's so many Santas in New York City. They're like looking at New York City, right? Like they see all the Santa.
Yeah. Right.
Salvation Army Santas.
There's hundreds of them, yeah.
Then they just like, I don't know, happen upon these two children in a park and they kidnap them to take them to the North Pole to find Santa. So we end up back at the North Pole and we get some pretty funny scenes here. The children sneak out of the ship. Well, first Dropo kind of helps them out. So we know Dropo's like a good guy. He's the silly Martian who doesn't really match the rest of them, but the kids sneak out into the North Pole snow. Voldar's the evil one with a mustache. By the way, that mustache was like totally fake, right?
Yeah. I think they needed a way for him to look more different and like kind of sinister, like the typical bad guy with the mustache. Yeah.
Like Snidely Whiplash. He's got to twirl the mustache.
Exactly. You know? Yeah.
That's it. Yeah.
Well, Voldar like hates this plan. He's the one who calls them nincompoops and thinks getting Santa's going to turn all the Martians soft. So he's like actively trying to like kill these kids. Kind of the whole time, which is like,
yeah, kind of and up. Santa.
Yeah. But this is when we get this random scene with this like polar bear.
Oh my God. How did that ever, you know, pass whatever stage it is in movie development when they have the storyboards and some artist came up with this polar bear, right? How did anybody think that polar bear looked good in any way? or even yeah. made sense in the story.
Well, how else would they have even done it?
Have to have another glass of wine.
I mean, in a way, it looks scarier.
Yeah. It was worse than like a kid's pageant, like costume of a polar bear. Like, they had to have something better nearby. But I guess this is a small studio. You know, it's not Warner Brothers, but right. looked like somebody sewed it by hand.
Yeah, it looked pretty like elementary school drama show tiger costume or polar bear costume rather.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was pretty funny.
Yeah, I mean they had to come up with that themselves. You know. They were on a low budget. You're right. It's like
honestly, though, I think it could have looked worse than it was.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it would have looked worse in Birdemic, probably. You know, in a way.
I mean, yeah, it looks obviously fake, but like, I mean, I don't know. I don't care.
I was just gonna say, it's such a brief moment of suspense. It's just like you did not need the kids in the cave. Really didn't. I mean, we were just as worried for them being out in the cold than we were. Like, we are not scared for them after seeing that shitty-ass costume. Now it's, I don't know, whatever.
Yeah, and nothing really happens. I think it kind of swipes at them and just, like, goes away.
Yeah,
well, exactly. I feel like the main purpose that Polar Bear served was Voldar's, like, trying to find the kids to, like, kill them, and they hide in that little cave, and he's about to find them in the cave, and then the Polar Bear scares them away. That's like the purpose that Polar Bear really served, but then it didn't need to come back, I guess, to like try to get the kids. But like you said, Byron, they were like, oh, we gotta add more suspense, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah.
But then as soon as they get out, they just get captured by that like robot.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I can't skip the robot. Does he have a name? I don't remember.
Yeah, he does have a name, but I can't remember what it is.
That robot is so lame.
Also yeah, pretty bad.
I mean that's a worse costume than the polar bear. I think that's obviously a dude.
Yeah, you know you might be right. I don't know.
Yeah, that looks like a Halloween costume. It's just a box, you know, with fake dials pinned. I mean,
the dials are like, so
on his chest, and it's just terrible.
Yeah, I told Jimmy,
cardboard box.
A really fun cosplay could be dressing up like these Martians. And just seeing if anyone knows what it's from.
Yeah, that would be pretty good. I doubt that anyone really know. I think you might like have to pass like 1,000 people before you get one person who knows.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so.
I mean, you never know. Like Comic-Cons and stuff, people know the most obscure things.
Yeah. I mean, that's true.
If we ever see someone dressed up like this, we'll know who they are. What does that say about us?
Yeah, right?
That's true.
So anyways, they use this robot to break into Santa's workshop. They use their little like ray guns to like freeze the elves, which is kind of funny. And then Mrs. Claus comes out and they freeze her, and he's like, "What'd you do to Mrs. Claus? She's gonna
those
be
stupid
so mad."
Guns. They don't make any sound. Like they're just dunk. Like you just hear like the little click of like a toy gun, like.
Yeah, they added no sound effects. It was literally just the sound the actors were making touching the guns. There was no added sound effects.
And then the person just stands still as though they got frozen. It took me a second to process, like, what's they're shooting him and they're freezing. Okay, like, it should have been very obvious.
The actors did an okay job acting frozen. I thought it was obvious.
I mean, well, it just took me a second. I didn't realize like that the guns had actually fired because there was no sound effect. You should like I don't know. I caught up pretty quickly. I'm just saying it took me a second. That's all.
Do you remember like in the I think it was like Droppo when we first meet him? He's like getting like tortured by a tickle ray. Remember that?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yep. I thought that would come back, but no.
No.
That's how they should have gotten Voldar in the end. Okay, we'll talk about that, but that would have been
well.
Funny.
That's they kind of do, but
well. Anyways, but they freeze Mrs. Claus, and Santa has that like line where he's all, "I don't think I've ever heard you be this quiet."
I know.
I was like, okay.
Yeah. And this is her film debut.
I know,
that's
right?
She's treated, yeah.
Exactly. And that's the last time we see her. We don't see her again for the rest of the movie.
Oh, yeah. She's still frozen to this day.
No, the Martians say that it wears off in a couple hours. So yeah, like they take Santa Claus, and then there's like another news broadcast scene where he says, Mrs. Claus identified that the captors were Martians. So like she gets unfrozen and tells the FBI about it, I assume. Okay. So anyways, they get taken to Mars and they tell Santa he's never going to leave. He's got to be Santa on Mars. And they make him a workshop where all he has to do is press buttons to make toys. Which, yeah. Again, I was like wondering if that was like if there was a message there.
I think so. I think it was like the modern thing at the time was like industrialization and like things becoming automated. And like even Santa's like, no, we're going to do this the old fashioned way. And like, I know he's just talking about like reindeer and shit, but like, you know, I think there was, it's like 1964. It's after the war, obviously, gearing up for like, I don't know.
The moon stuff, right? When was the moon stuff? That was later, but this was leading into all that. Yeah. Yeah. And this is like Woody and Buzz and their dilemma with like, you know, space toys became all the rage and used to be cowboys. And yeah, I think there's a little bit of that going on.
Yeah, and obviously all the actual footage, military footage and everything, it was kind of, I don't know if it was glorifying or kind of
going on,
pretending the awfulness or the destructiveness of space travel and the development of huge aircraft and things that could go beyond our imagination, you know.
Yeah, just like technology, basically. Mm-hmm. Like the pills and stuff that the Martians ate and the like rays they used to make the whatever they used to make the kids go to sleep. Just kind of like, yeah, there's some fear about technology and how it was just kind of taking over our world, you know, between the lines.
Well, and very dehumanizing.
Yeah.
You know,
even
the humans, the little human children are, you know, hate that the food is in pills and you can't taste it and are surprised by the lack of any kind of even touch. There's no closeness at all between the Martians and their children.
I mean, they do the little forehead touchy thing.
Yeah, they do that.
That's true. Okay, we'll call it good there.
Yeah,
I think that the mom Martian does hug them at the very end, though. Like, I noticed that, like, oh, she's hugging them.
Yeah,
she does. I don't think she does earlier.
But that's after Santa made them all laugh.
Right. Oh, yeah, dude, the laughing fits. They honestly made me laugh, though, when they're just like laughing for like.
It's so absurd. You just can't help but laugh along. It's just like, oh my God.
I mean, it was contagious. You know, laughter can be that.
Yeah.
I forgot to mention before they get back to Mars, Voldar, like, bring Santa and the kids into the airlock. And the little kid the whole time is like, this is the airlock. And if you close the door, we get sucked into space. And he's like saying all this stuff. And I'm like, obviously he's about to lock you in here. And then he does. And for some reason, Billy's the only one who seems upset about it. That he gets locked in and Santa and Betty are just standing there. And he's like pounding on the door, like trying to get out. But they're just, I'm like, why is no one helping Billy try to get out of this situation? But Santa uses his Santa chimney magic to like suck them through that tube and get him out of there. But
Santa has magic you don't know about. At some point, the leader guy says that.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah.
How did he get out of there?
But I think funny when Santa shows up and he's like, well, Voldar accidentally left us in the airlock. And then he came up here and accidentally threw on the door switch. So we had to get out of there. And that would have been the end of us, you know, accidentally.
And like, again, like to my mom's point earlier, it is a great depiction of Santa. I mean, you were talking more about the actor's job, you know, and just his look being perfect. But like that, I kind of like that. As cheesy and stupid as it is, it's like, okay, yeah, like Santa is just loves everyone. He's just going to instantly forgive this guy. It's kind of like upsetting. Like, really? You're just going to let that fucker get away with this shit? He tried to kill you and those kids. But it's like for the characterization, it's like, okay, I see what you're trying to do. Like, yeah, that is how Santa should be, I guess, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
One of the things that bothered me to no end was just, how bad like the props were? You know, these switches that control things. They look like, I don't know, a mousetrap. They didn't even look like a real switch that actually could do something, you know, and then they would be mounted onto plywood and painted. Mm-hmm. And it was just so lame. Now, by this time, Star Trek and other movies, and actually the real world had better looking, quote, technology or things like that, because they had to keep sending switches. Oh, and you know, the takeoff of the rocket ship and then the landing, all of that stuff, it was unforgivably bad.
Yeah. Oh man, you guys didn't even see Plan 9 though. This is like a couple light years of improvement off of
Plan
9. Yeah,
it's definitely better than Plan 9 set wise.
Plan 9 is truly, truly just bare room with like a little chair or two chairs for the cockpit.
It really is.
And like maybe and a curtain
like
in the
some
back.
Random stereo equipment on top of a wooden table.
Yeah. What is the year difference, Daniel, from Plan 9 to
Plan 9? Like, original was 57, so this is 7 years later.
More than 5.
Wow. I mean, this is a marked improvement, but it's so bad. There was some other point too about that. I was going to say, about the terrible sets and the terrible, you know, framing. Like, the camera's always just giving one perspective. I mean, it's really like, as though it is a stage production. I mean, that's kind of what I think gives it that TV film vibe. It seems like one of those, like that Peter Pan one that was like kind of a live stage, but film for TV kind of thing. Like, it almost has that kind of vibe. So like, once you're able to, and it's like, you know, it's hard to, because there's so many bad elements, there's so many weird things that take you out of it. But in little moments when you can suspend your disbelief and just be like, okay, this is like a little stage play for kids, like, it kind of doesn't matter. So on some level, it's like kind of like, okay, whatever. You just give everything a pass. Like, yeah, that's the machine that makes the toys and that's how you operate it. Sure, fine. Okay, like, I'm just going with it. But there are other times where it's like, come on, that's the best you could do. Like the guns in particular. At some point, you see some really menacing looking machine gun there. Like, one of the aliens has one. But that's like only in that one little scene. All the other times, it's like those cheesy looking plunger guns. And maybe they didn't want the guns to look too scary or something. But
yeah, I do. I think that's part of it. Yeah. They didn't want it to look too scary for kids. But yeah, one of them has like a larger gun that they never really seem to use.
Yeah, it never comes back. And so, yeah, as far as like the poor props and sets, it's like, on one hand, I give it a pass because it's like, okay, just the whole way this whole thing is presented, it's just like, this is for kids. I can't believe they released it in theaters and that they showed it more than that one year. But you know, on the other hand, it's just like, come on guys. Like, talk about low budget. It's very low budget.
I actually thought that the set when they get to Santa's workshop on Mars and he has the toy machine, and I actually thought that looked kind of cool. Like, specifically the door they go through was like kind of coolly designed, I thought.
Oh yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah, that door had a kind of a neat, like, cleverly designed look to it with the paint.
So it sort of looked like they put a lot more energy into that set than the other ones. And yeah. the radar box.
Yeah. You beat me to it. Yeah.
empty radar box, that's the perfect size for these two kids to just hide in with nothing else in it. That was pretty silly. I was going to say, though, earlier when I was talking about Voldar locking them in the airlock and then Santa comes into the control room, or before Santa comes in, Kemar is like, you killed them? And they have the worst fight scene I've ever seen in any movie.
That is a really terrible fight scene.
Okay, I have to say about that, because like I said, I had never heard of this movie, and I'm going in. It's called Santa Claus Conquers the Martians. So I'm thinking there's going to be some conquests in this.
Yeah, especially with all the military footage,
sci-fi action, and and so I was like very disappointed that it was not.
He conquers them with love and compassion. And
that's the lesson.
That's how he conquers them.
That is, though, how he conquers them. That is what they're going for. Like, he conquers them with his love and blah, blah, blah. And so, you know, very sweet little Christmas message. But yeah, it doesn't deliver on what you hope it might, you know, like, oh, this is a cult.
I know. I wanted to see Santa, like, movie. Getting some fist fights and stuff.
Yeah, or like ordering a tank to go blow up something else. Like, yeah. Even if it's not him doing it, but yeah.
I never watched the trailers for this movie. Did any of you? I mean, did they have trailers that were shown in movie theaters prior to it?
I didn't, actually. Anyway,
what about the fact that, remember the part where, like, the United Nations and the whole space program and the whole world, the whole Earth are trying to get Santa back and the children? And so that was another interesting point. The Earth gathers, everybody, you know, works together to save.
Yeah, but then it never goes anywhere.
No, I know. But, you know, another stupid little, like, it could have been explored more. The writers could have done more with that. But again, it just, those guys were drunk or something. I don't know what happened to those people in the writing room.
They just, like, tried to, I assume that they sent. They do send like a rocket ship up, but I assume they just, like, didn't make it to Mars. Those astronauts all died.
We're so far away. Died.
And at the very end, they let Santa and the kids go, and they say like, "Bye, everyone," and they walk through the doorway, and that's the end of the movie. I'm like, how did they get back to Earth? Did anyone take them there? Are they getting back on their own with Santa magic?
Isn't it weird? As much as I kind of wanted the movie to end, you know. I didn't like the ending because it wasn't really an ending. It didn't wrap it up. I mean, it's just so funny because in spite of it all, listeners out there, in spite of it all, you want to go for the ride. You want the movie to make sense, to take you somewhere, you know, to give you some emotions or new observation or some relationship to humanity. And just, again, was so disappointing at the end because, yeah, just they just were gone. Bye. Out. Gone. The end.
Bad. They should have at least had a scene where Santa makes it back to his workshop and it's like, "Mrs. Claus, I missed you." And like, "Oh, you made it just in time for Christmas Eve." And it ends with him saying, like, "Merry Christmas," whatever, with Mrs. Claus.
I think it should have ended with Chochum, but, you know, that's just me.
Yeah. Okay.
That's true. Like, Chochum pops up and he's just like,
"The children of Mars will be happy after all."
Yeah.
Finally, just as I planned it.
Yeah, that voice was a little much.
Yeah.
Yeah, he really is, like, it's like one of the most miserable. Like, he's really suffering. My voice.
Yeah, he's old as fuck.
That I've ever seen. He really doesn't want to be there. He really
What if Chochum is actually the guy from 2001 A Space Odyssey?
Oh, the star baby?
Like the ape? Or the star baby. Baby. Wow. Is this in universe with 2001 A Space Odyssey? Okay.
Wait, he somehow, like, links back to the past or, like, goes to an alternate dimension. Because that's in the future in 2001. I mean, that takes place in the year 2001. So, I don't know. You're making me think, though.
I'm sorry. I thought the idea was that he becomes this, like, ultra dimensional being and could do anything at the end of that movie. Whatever. Anyways, we're not here to talk about
exactly
that.
I mean, no, yeah, the next step in evolution or whatever. We should do that freaking movie, though. We're due.
Okay,
we have to talk, though, before the actual ending and Santa leaves. Though, the Voldar comes in, he wants to kill Santa, and that he and the kids are like, "We'll be ready for him." And he runs into the workshop and then they defeat him with the toys. They're like throwing bubbles at him and there's like toy soldiers marching at him.
Yeah.
They keep going to this like Native American toy, like hitting a drum that like made me really uncomfortable.
That's right.
Yeah. I think it's just supposed to be another quirky toy, but nowadays it's just like so charged. Like,
and, well, the shots of that toy. Just like, the face is so intense on that toy, too. I'm just like, oh, God. Okay. Too much.
Yeah.
But he's just like, meh, meh. Like, honestly, it would have been funny. You know what should have happened is if the kids were doing what they were doing, and then Droppo shows up and he's like, tickle this. And he uses the tickle radar gun tickle or whatever. This.
Oh, why don't you tickle this?
That would have been,
oh, Keep going into the Tigger laugh. It's similar though. Yeah. But yeah, man, I you know, as far as this movie, you know, the director, you said, mentioned that it was for kids. The scene in particular is like for kids. It's like the Home Alone moment where like the kids are getting back at the bad guy adult with like all their little toys and contraptions. And I could see as a kid during that time, because, you know, you want this guy to get some justice done to him. What is his name? Voltor? Like, you know, he really deserves a Voldar. Yeah, he really deserves something. And so it is kind of cool, you know, when I put on my kid goggles to see the kids like giving him what he deserves in a fun way, though, in a nonviolent kind of just silly way. Yeah.
So did you know that most of their names end in Mar for Martian, except for Droppo?
Oh.
And that I was looking this up, that the mother Martian's name is Momar for Mom Martian. Yeah. The girl Martian's name is Germar, short for girl Martian. And the boy Martian's name is Bomar, short for boy Martian.
Why did we not know this?
That is so stupid.
I was reading that and I was like, wow, okay.
So what's Except Voldar? For the
I don't know, but specifically Momar, Germar,
the
and
villain
boy,
Martian.
Bomar. Yeah, Voldar. Well, it's not Mar, it's Dar. It's Voldar. So yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
The leader's name is Kemar. Maybe that's short for King Martian. Kemar.
Yeah, that works.
Okay.
I didn't read that one, but I'm like trying to come up with it. But yeah, I read that. That was pretty funny. Apparently, the girl Martian actress Pia Zadora like went on to be like a famous actress, kind of in like the 80s.
Cool.
She's kind of like a
Jane Fonda sex symbol. I mean, I don't know if she was an actress
with but just famous still.
Anyways,
famous person.
Famous.
Well, she made a lot of movies. Because I was looking something up, and like that specifically, the girl Martian. That was her first. This is her first movie, and she went on to like kind of make a name for herself. Or she's a singer. She became a singer. She's in a lot of music videos. I don't know. If you see a picture of her, you'll be like, oh, that she looks familiar. Yeah, maybe she was a singer, actually, in the 80s. Anyways.
Speaking of singing, what about that title song?
I liked it.
I did, kind of fun. What's it called? Here Comes Santa Claus?
It's like, no. Hooray for Santa Claus.
Santa. Not Santa. It was Santa Claus.
Hooray for Santa Claus.
Yeah. And the little groovy trumpet sound, you know, which sounds real 60s. You could just picture the girls in their go-go dresses, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So I actually kind of wondered to myself, I wonder why this didn't cross over or become more of a popular song, because sung by children like it was, you know, it could have been a really cute song in schools and, I don't know, just kids learning a Christmas carol. It was redeeming, however.
I think
but
it's
it went
time.
On and on and on and on. It was very long.
Yeah, they play the whole song for the opening credits, but I liked it. And I think it's time, Cynthia, we help this song bring a comeback.
Should we? Kelly, come on. You can make an arrangement for your band.
Yeah. I can't wait to have a playlist with all these ridiculous songs. I don't know how many. All I can think is the Tor Johnson's mom song, but then this one.
I love that one too.
Santa Claus. Yeah. Oh, we got to have the song from Birdemic where he's like, family, having a good time.
Oh my God, you guys missed the gems. Yeah.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Having ourselves a party.
Yeah. Hanging out with my family. That's right.
Yes. Byron's like rolling his eyes. It's a great song.
I'm not rolling my eyes. No, it just seems on brand for what little I know about Birdemic.
Yeah.
You got
It's honestly
the
best part of the movie.
Byron.
Yeah. Audience, if you clicked on this one because you just love Christmas movies or you know this movie. Well, I don't know if you listen to our podcast, please. We would love if you listen to it. But go check out Birdemic if you haven't seen it. It's a little torturous. You won't enjoy it at all. But it's just fascinating. It's really fascinating. You got to check it out.
No. You don't watch Birdemic. Listen to our episode. Your basis.
Yeah.
Spare yourselves. Yeah.
It's terrible.
Well, going back to what Jimmy mentioned earlier, they did turn this movie into a musical that premiered in 1993 at the Factory Theater in Chicago. Adapted and directed by Sean Abley.
Wow.
And then, get this, you guys. Here's the real fun fact. In 2006, a second theatrical production premiered at the Maverick Theater in Fullerton, California. This version was adapted by Brian Newell and Nick McGee. This has become a comedic success and a local tradition, and it has been performed there every holiday season since 2006. And I looked it up. Yeah. And I was like, Jimmy, we have to go see this in Fullerton. And it's completely sold out.
We live in Fullerton, by the way, if you don't know. It's like, so yeah, this is like in our backyard.
Yeah, to our listeners. Now you know where to find us.
So next year, Kelly, I'll come down to LA and watch it with you.
I mean, I can't believe it.
If it's presented, it's not an easy style or genre of theater to do well. But if it is presented, produced as a parody, you know, it could be very funny because you're kind of allowed to laugh. Like, part of the problem of this film is I didn't know what to make of it. You know, it wasn't really a comedy, but it was so badly made. But I would love to see it on stage.
Yeah, because like we were saying,
this would work a lot better on stage, honestly.
Yeah, like we were saying, the way it's shot and the way the actors are acting, it was giving me, you know, yeah, like TV movie vibes or like stage production vibes. And this would be a really funny musical for sure. So next year, guys, make your way to Fullerton, California. We'll go see it
together.
Can't wait.
All right. So this brings me to my final question. This brings me to my final question before we do final thoughts and letter grades. Do we feel like this theme of science fiction and Christmas mixes well? Like when you heard the title Santa Claus Conquers the Martians, we kind of already mentioned how that sounded kind of cool. Like, do you think that had this been done a different way, could this be a cool movie?
I think that because if you're assuming that Santa Claus is real, then you're basically saying that mythical creatures and or aliens are real. So I do think that Santa Claus can play well with other types of fantasy, I guess, science fiction, whatever you want to call it, because Santa Claus itself is ridiculous. So yes, I think Santa Claus has a place in science fiction.
Yeah, I think it's fine. You can mix Santa Claus with, you know, aliens that can get from Earth to Mars in a matter of hours, but you know, can't make their own television shows. You know, that kind of sci-fi, I think, totally works with Santa Claus.
Yeah,
why not? I mean,
like Interstellar sci-fi with Santa Claus just in the mix. You know, I don't know if it works with that kind of hard sci-fi.
Well, like, so much. I mean, Santa Claus can only travel the world and do what he does with wormholes.
Oh my God, you're right. Like
interdimensional, you know, linking. That's some true. Kind of time travel, something like that.
And this whole like sleigh metaphor, I'm pretty sure that's a flying saucer. Like, how else?
What are the reindeer then?
Aliens, dude. Duh. Well,
that's for other kinds of aliens.
The real Santa Claus was misidentified as a flying saucer and shot down in 1958 by the military. So, and that's why everything has been terrible since then. So,
oh my God.
Now that's a movie I could get behind. I want that to be the plot of a movie. That's great.
I was duped by the title. I really was. I can't believe how much my brain sort of came up with something. Just hearing Santa Claus Conquers the Martians. I instantly loved the idea that Santa Claus, who, yes, is fantasy, but still, to me, very endearing, something I kept alive for my children, something that still makes me smile, a part of Christmas that's, you know, sweet, and the kid in us loves the Santa Claus. So I love the idea of a good guy, you know, Santa Claus winning. and conquering what I assumed, given the title, were the bad guys. And, you know, it wasn't that at all, as we've discussed earlier. But so I think that it wasn't a very good mix, but it could have been. But I was looking for a badass Santa Claus, you know, somebody strong and ready to kick ass, which doesn't make sense.
Right, that's what the title promised.
How Santa Claus is supposed to be. But there was something about wanting Santa to win, you know. So
I think they probably have movies like that by now. I know there's like... I actually don't know the plot, or I probably shouldn't be mentioning it, but like there's something called like Santa's Sleigh, where I think he kills people. Like, I'm just saying, like, they've done other movies where there's like, you know, a scary Santa, or there's probably a violent, like, you know, war hungry Santa movie out there. Or if not, we should make it.
Oh yeah, there's a whole genre of Christmas horror.
Yeah,
there's murderous Santa.
Yeah, because I mean, there's something creepy. I mean, I feel like people have pointed it out, how this guy just like kind of invades your home in the middle of the night and all this stuff. He's just wandering around inside your house. Something a little bit creepy about that if you think about it a certain way.
I choose to not think about it that way.
I mean, isn't it creepy to think that, you know, naughty or nice watches what you do?
Yeah.
That's kind of creepy.
Totally.
How's it going to sound that chimney, dude? What kind of chimney magic is this? What's he doing?
Yeah.
Okay, on that note, it's time for some final thoughts and letter grades. And to change things up, why don't we start with Byron today?
Okay. I mean, Santa Claus conquers the Martians. I mean, you sort of know what you're getting into based off the title. I thought it was going to be a little bit more for, like, young adults, but this movie is, like, for kids. Like, for 4 to 8-year-olds are the people that this movie was meant for. I mean, it's nothing about it is like particularly good. I don't know. It's hard to even put a letter grade. I guess I'll give it like a D.
It's a hard one. Yeah.
I guess the only redeeming quality is that some of the actors are classically trained. I'll give it that. They found some decent actors for this ridiculous and terrible script. But boy, this is not one that's meant to be taken by any means seriously, nor is it meant for really any intellect to be applied to. However, if people were going to go watch it or sing, watch other people sing songs from it or whatever is going down in Fullerton, that sounds kind of fun. It's ridiculous enough that I guess I'm glad I watched it for this podcast, but I by no means need to watch it again, or I don't know. Now that I say all these things, it is kind of fun to have a weird Christmas one. Like, I never thought about this movie, and now whenever someone asks me what my favorite Christmas movie is, I'm going to have this as a joke response. So I like it right. For that. Yeah.
All right. Cynthia.
I have to say that this movie is an F. It's a very, very, very bad example of filmmaking. I guess that it exists at all is something, but then again, so would an F grade on a test or essay. You know, you wrote something, let's say, if you're going to relate to school. But there's just nothing good about it except for how adorable Santa Claus is. But that's just because it's Santa Claus. Nothing to do really with the show, with the movie, how well it's made or not made in this case. The dialogue is so contrived, so flat. I'm mad at this shit. This is like, come on, don't even. I'm happy that I did the podcast, however, because there's something kind of wonderful and healthy about just tearing things to shreds. You know, like this just experience, especially with all of you, I respect your opinions. You guys know so much more about film and are so much more analytical than I am or ever will be about the, you know, art form of filmmaking. But so that's been kind of delightful today, just ripping it up. But it's an F. This is a very bad movie. The end.
All right, Daniel.
Okay, you guys mentioned the song. I have to say this because this is the Daniel corner. I do not like the song. The song is super obnoxious. It's the most, it was stuck in my head much longer than I wanted it to be. It's not good. Okay, I'm sorry. And a lot of other stuff in this movie is kind of equally obnoxious. Look, I can forgive the budget. The fact that stuff doesn't look convincingly real on a low budget is fine. You know, I don't care. The bear costume, that's fine. It's silly. It's for children. The logic and the structure of the story doesn't add up. That's fine. But like a lot of it is like just like obnoxious kid stuff that I don't like. But, you know, I can't be, you know, people got out there and tried to make it. And I think it would work better on the stage. And maybe it's just old. Maybe it played better at the time. But I don't know. It's like a D plus for me.
All right, Jimmy.
Yeah, Dan, you kind of stole my grade. I think I'm going to end up on a D plus here too. Some redeeming qualities, which is just that some of the zaniness and silliness, like the guy at the beginning with his terrible jokes and his silly laugh at his own jokes, and like Santa, all the stuff with the bad jokes, like they kind of got me, like, man, that's such a stupid joke. And like, I don't know, something about that. So I had moments of entertainment. And then like I mentioned, like I kind of agree with my mom, like just seeing Santa in the movie, there's something a little heartwarming about his presence and the way he was portrayed, I think, brought out the heartwarming elements of Santa, you know, his forgiveness and his love of everyone. And he just wants to help. And he's just so jolly and all just laughing all the time. So I kind of appreciated that, you know, being Christmas season and everything. It was kind of like, oh, okay, Santa, you're the man, Santa. But like, so many. Gosh, what's the word? I don't even know. It just feels kind of hollow. It feels kind of just like a waste of time. It's bad, but it's like you kind of give it a pass because, yeah, it's for kids. And it's like, I thought it was a TV movie at first. And like, okay, so maybe I can lower my standards. But even with all the lowering of the standards and like giving it different passes, like there's nothing there to really enjoy. And even like the bad aspects of it aren't really bad enough to be like, you know, so funny. It's because it's so terrible. If you think about like the entertainment value of like movies like The Room or even Troll 2 or, yeah, I don't know. So sometimes I do these letter grades based on ranking of how I would want to watch it again or how much I might want to watch it again. Anyway, if someone put this on around a Christmas time, it would actually be kind of a fun thing to have on in the background. So maybe D plus a little too harsh, but I could give it lower. I don't know. I'm going to stick with D plus. We'll see how the rest of the grades shake out. And if I want to, you know, change it for its relative position later, but that's all I can really say. It felt hollow and empty and like, except for the heart of Santa Claus, that's like the only redeeming value, but man, yeah, I don't have a lot of good things to say really. That's it.
So, you know, I heard that this movie was really bad, but when it first started and we had the scene at Santa's workshop and we were like laughing at that guy, I was like, okay, like this is kind of cute and silly. Honestly, the worst part of this movie is the Martian costumes for me. They're so obnoxious and green. And we didn't even talk about the terrible like face paint they made these poor actors wear. Like, it's so bad. It's like, either don't do it at all or like way more green. Like, that, yeah, that kind of like was the worst part for me. But like the Santa Claus is great. Like, I felt like the kid actors were doing the best they could. And like, same thing with all the other actors. I thought, you know, compared to some of these other bad movies, the editing wasn't that terrible. The acting wasn't that terrible. Besides the Martian costumes, I thought that the sets were kind of cute and endearing. And, you know, as I was listening to you guys talk, I was thinking about, had I seen this as a little kid, I probably would have liked it. Like, this definitely seems like a pretty cute little kid movie. I could totally imagine little kids cracking up at Dropo and the stupid fight scene at the end against Voldar with the kids. So I mean, compared to some of these other movies that I never want to watch again, like, I would totally watch this again. And I love Christmas movies in general. So, like, this might just turn into, like, oh, I'm, like, wrapping presents. Let me put on a random Christmas movie. I would totally put this one on just to have in the background. So I'm going to give this a C+.
All right.
We have a lot of diversity in our opinions.
Yeah.
I mean, they're all on a lower level, but, yeah.
Yeah.
Kelly, you are being, I almost wish I agreed with you because you're being really fair about the movie, but, you know, I still give it an F. If I'm at your house and you have this movie on, I won't make you change a station because it would be funny just to even listen to it in the background and to come by and laugh, which is kind of like Mean Girls, you know, let's go watch that movie and just make fun of it.
Yeah.
Well, that's like why people love these bad movies, right? Like, some of these movies I've said are so bad that I don't think they're funny and I don't want to watch them again. Like, Birdemic.
Look at us all. We're completely exploiting bad movies for the sake of a podcast to be able to get online here and talk about them and make fun of them and, you know, rip it out together. So they exist for a reason. It's been fun today, though. I love hearing you guys' opinions.
Yeah.
Well, we have one more left on our bad movies season. Next up, to wrap things up in hopefully a fun, nostalgic way for us, we're going to watch Spice World, which I haven't watched since I was like 8 years old, so I can't wait to see it again. And then after that, maybe we'll do another like wrap-up season where we talk about these and we will crown the best of the worst movies. So start thinking. I know we didn't all watch all of them, but that's okay. You can still rank the ones you did see. So to all our listeners out there, thank you for listening. Have a wonderful Christmas. Happy holidays. Happy New Year. We will see you again in 2024. Friday Flicks Podcast is a JK Entertainment production with original theme music by Jimmy Anthony. Please subscribe so you never miss an episode and rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. Follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Friday Flicks Podcast for updates about future episodes. And please email us at jkentertainment247@gmail.com to contact us and let us know what you think. I'm your host, Kelly Anthony. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.